Okay, so we're just the Rav.
I do apologize. I meant to bring the Maxwell House Haggadah so we can all follow along inside. It's not a joke. My sister works for Manischewitz.
I have no restaurant.
Oh, okay. Great. My sister actually works for Manischewitz. Today's Tuesday? Today's Wednesday. Yesterday was Tuesday. She went to the Maxwell House corporate office headquarters, which is actually right by Navy Pier, downtown Chicago. And every year, Maxwell and Manischewitz, they have a mock Seder for their employees, something like that. So she came in for that. So, it's a good time of year for Manischewitz and Maxwell.
I grew up and that
using the Maxwell Haggadah. I think Klal Yisrael
did. Everybody did it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On the west side of Chicago, everybody used the Maxwell.
Yeah. Okay, good. So we have.
Not the entire Haggadah, but I meant just most of it.
Yeah, I'm sure this will be great for what we need. Okay, so what I want to talk a little bit tonight about is parenting advice and chinuch tips from the Haggadah. It's something that I've been, first of all, something I'm passionate about. I want to go into chinuch. I wanted to go into chinuch since I was in 10th grade. And I've done lots of different, informal education, different things I've done over the years. But over the years, with regards to Pesach, I've been collecting different divrei Torah or vartlach that have to do with chinuch. Or parenting, etc., that come up from the Haggadah, and I've been, just collecting them, making one large document on my computer, and then over time, you have enough to give a shiur. So I'll share some thoughts today. So the first idea I just learned this year from Rabbi Dov Carroll, actually, from Skokie, here. He's my brother-in-law.
Oh.
Yeah. Married my sister Esther Malkas. So I heard a vort recently, so I texted him in Israel to see if he can send me the Maror Makom. But I heard a vort b'shem Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zatzal. On the pasuk ki shalcha bincha, which is really the basis for the whole Haggadah. When your child will ask you what happens, we tell them over the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So Rav Aaron said that notion of ki yishalcha bincha is lashon asid, right? It's future tense. So Rav Aaron said that you have to anticipate the questions your children are going to ask you when it comes to chinuch, right? What your child is going to ask you tomorrow, you need to be thinking today what you're going to answer him, right? So if you just had a baby boy, Baruch Hashem, we just had a baby, our first child, about six and a half weeks old now. So, he's going to ask me, who knows, why is the sky blue? But I think it's kedai and it's important, when you get to more serious things, when it comes to Torah, when it comes to Emunah, difficult, discussions to have, I think, need to be thought of in advance, not just, when Rachman Litzlan, there's a tragedy, then to talk about Emunah, to think about what we're going to say ahead of time. And I think that's what Rav Aaron says when it comes to preparation. Again, the layout of the shiur, I'll just give a little bit of a framework first. We're going to first talk about child-focused learning. We're going to focus on the children. Then we're going to talk about parenting, focusing on us. And then we're going to talk about general Mesorah. So the first yisod, I think, when it comes to teaching children is we have to prepare. Right? You can't just go in and do it on the fly. You have to think about what we're going to say over to our children. The second idea is chanoch l'naro pidarko. Rav Rimon here in his Haggadah has a beautiful idea. He talks about how we address the sons differently, the Arba Banim, which I think is on page number 2 of this packet, page 90 in the Art Scroll Haggadah. So when we refer to the different sons, we address them differently. But what he says is that most of them are with the shoresh of Amar until you get to the She'ini Yodei Lishol, and then it's Vihigadata Labincha Bayomahu Leimor. So he says, Haggadah is a lashon based on Rashi and the Rechaim that really draws the heart. We're not going to read everything inside, but I wanted to give you guys the packet to have. But Rav Rimon says that we address every single child differently. Right? We speak to them differently. You have to understand what is going to connect with each child. And I think that's really chanoch l'naro pidarko. And we hear in education now, there's something called differentiated instruction or differentiated learning. Right? So if you walk into, let's say, Hillel Torah, you'll see that the classroom's broken up and you'll have different groups of kids learning with each other. Sometimes it's the kids who are more advanced, kids who need this, whatever it is. So as hot as differentiated instruction is bizman hazeh, it was really an older thing. I think it was really first written about in the 1960s, and then in the 1990s it started to get a little bit more coverage, and really now is it really taking off. Maybe with the millennials, whatever you want to call it. But there's a woman named Lynn O'Brien, and she wrote an article about differentiated instruction, and she had such a good chap, and it really changes the game. It's not just you break up the classroom. She says differentiated instruction, and really what she says is chanoch l'naro pidarko, is that teaching every single child what's the best way for them to be learning. Meaning how does a child has to understand what makes me a good learner, right? Some kids are visual, some kids are, you're learning math, so you can write, 3 times 2, 100 times, but sometimes a kid just needs to see 3 apples on the board with 3 apples, and then, 6, now I understand, right? You have to understand each child is different. And I really think, I spoke to the Mashkiach in Tells here once, I was schmoozing him about teaching, you know, Knight of Crown, whatever it was, and I said, you know, give me something for chinuch. What's something as machanech I need to know? So he told me, chanoch lenar al pi darko, and I think this is pshat. Chanoch lenar al pi darko has two things. First, there's darko. Every single child is different. So you have to figure out what is derech shelo, figure out what's that, the proper derech for that child, and only once you understand that, can you be mechanichim? Can you do chanoch lenar al pidarko? First, you have to establish what is this derech. Then you can be mechanichim. And I think that's pshat here going on in the Haggadah. You have to understand that you have four different children sitting around the table, okay? And you have to see, okay, this child needs the matzumar munachim lefanach. He needs props, right? He needs to see it. Some kids are more intellectual. They can just talk out the concepts with you. But we have to understand. We have to be able to engage every single child, you know, and meet him where he needs to be met. And that's also, you know, there's the well-known idea of Rav Hirsch that, you know, is a little bit controversial, but Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch has the idea that Yitzhak kind of, I don't know if you can say it, but he writes it, he kind of drops the ball on the chinuch of Esav. He says that Yitzhak gave the same chinuch to Yaakov, Yaakov and Esav, and that led to Esav going astray. You know, maybe he didn't have as much as Zitzvayish, he needed to be running around a little bit more, and maybe he needed a different type of chinuch. And he says that led to Esav going off, let's say, a little bit. So just an interesting idea, but Aleph, we have preparation for Var and Lichtenstein, and then Beis, we have the Chanoch Lenar Alpidarko Dafka Derech Shelo. I think related to that is the notion of teaching each child as an individual. It is a little bit different, but definitely related. There's a Haggadah on the second page of the packet called the Ber HaChaim Haggadah. This is from Rav Meilich Biderman. He's a popular Magir Chassidus Rebbe in Bnei Brak nowadays. And this vort on the right-hand side of the page, we're not going to read it inside, but this is worth the whole entire Haggadah. I think I bought the Haggadah, it was like $22, whatever it was, $23. I promise you, this, you might pay me after I tell you this vort. Not kidding. He says as follows. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu Zocha to be the Manig of Klal Yisrael? What Moshe Mamish Rabbeinu, what did he do to earn that title? So the Medrash in Shmos Rabbah tells us, Beis, that Moshe Rabbeinu, before he was Moshe Rabbeinu, was Moshe HaRoeh. He was a shepherd, right? And what did he do? He's watching over the whole flock, and one little shepherd runs away. So what does he do? He runs after that sheep, speaks to it, calms it down, and says, come back to the flock, and he brings that sheep back to the flock. Oh! That's why he's zochah to be Moshe Rabbeinu. So I don't know if anybody's involved in HR, but if a guy came to you, right, to be a CEO or something like that of a company, and the first thing he had on his resume was he was a shepherd, it's not so impressive, right? So he says pshat is that if Moshe Rabbeinu can look at every single sheep and view them as an individual, not just part of the larger flock, so he can kal v'chomer do that to people. If he did it for a sheep, he could for sure do that for people. And it wasn't just for people, right? We like to say chesed starts in the home. This was in Moshe's own house. Why? Because how does Moshe Rabbeinu name his children? The Torah tells us, Shem ha'echad gershom. The first one's name was what? Gershom. And what should it say? The second one's name is Eliezer. But what is the Shem ha'echad gershom? V'shem ha'echad Eliezer. This one's name, number one, his name was Gershom. And v'shem ha'echad, and this one was Eliezer. He looked at every single child as an individual. Right? I'm married to a prero, right? Rabbi Elisha Prero, one of his daughters, right? So I married number 8 in the family. Kanai Nahara, they have 11 children. Right? So there's a lot. And you know, sometimes they go by numbers as a joke. I'm 8.5 because I married in, right? But the idea is that it doesn't matter how many children you have to look at every single child as an individual. So what does Rav Meilich Biderman do? He says, this is true in the Haggadah. Because when we introduce the Arba Banim, what do we say? We say there's 1, 2, 3, 4. No. Look at, again, page 90, halfway down. Right after Baruch HaMakom. Echad Chacham ve'echad Rasha ve'echad Tam ve'echad She'enu Yedei Elishol. Every single child, you have to address every single child as an individual. Give that child undivided attention. Sometimes we get upset as parents or as educators, whatever you want to call it, that our children aren't really focusing on us. Whether it's, you know, whether on a phone or whatever. Their minds are, they're not looking at you in the eye. Right? But I think part of that comes from us. Right, we have to give them our undivided attention. We have to focus on them as individuals, right? And give them that kind of chizik to show them that we're looking at you and we're only listening to you and we believe in you. So I think that's an important idea. So far we have preparation, we have chanoch lenar pidarko, and we have each child as an individual. If we turn the page here, we can just mention also there's an unbelievable emes liyakov. Right, later on when we're darshaning the psukim in the Haggadah, let's see if we can find the page real quick. From Vinitzak, page 94. It says, Vinitzak el Hashem, Elokei Avosinu, V'yishma es Hashem, es Kolenu, V'yar es Onyenu, V'es Amalenu, V'es Lachatzenu. So what's V'es Amalenu? So it says that, Baal Haggadah, Ilu Habonim, K'ma Shenemar, Kol HaBen HaYilod, HaYeora, Tashlichuhu. Right, throw them into the river. Chol habas tichayun, and all the daughters, the girls who were born can live. So we want to kill the Jewish baby boys. Right, so I think this relates to this idea of focusing on each child and showing that each child is special. Because Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has a well-known vort, and this vort's also $1 million vort. Right, he paskins the Ramah paskins in Yoredeya that the milk of an Egyptian woman is kosher. If you look on the left-hand side of this page of the Emes LeYaakov that's printed out. Next page in the Haggadah, Emes LeYaakov on top. So he says as follows. Behine divrei Rashi elu huval halacha berama yoredeus min pei aleph si'iv zayin. Chalav mitzris kechalav yisraelis. You're allowed to have the milk. You're allowed to nurse from an Egyptian woman. Mikol makom lo yaniku tinok mina mitzris im efshar b'yisraelis. Dechalav ovedes kochavim mitantem halev umoli lo tevara. It's best, if you can, to give the baby to nurse from a Jewish woman. It's best not to have her to have the baby nursed from an Egyptian woman. And he quotes the Gra, V'ayin sham ber ha-Gra, b'shem ha-Rajba, sh'makor ha-davar humi Moshe Rabbeinu, sh'siri v'linok min ha-mitzrios m'yishim sh'haya asu l'dabri m'shkina, ayin sham. So the Gra says, where do we get this from? The Gra quotes a Rajba, and the Rajba says, we learn this out from Moshe Rabbeinu, since Moshe Rabbeinu didn't what nurse from an Egyptian nurse, or woman, excuse me, so therefore, b'nei Yisrael, l'dore doros, so it's best not to drink from an Egyptian woman. So says Rav Yaakov, like, what's going on? Rashi told us the reason is because Moshe Rabbeinu was also the davar mishchina. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to speak to the Shechina, so he can't be mitatim his lev benefesh. But what about us? So says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, an amazing word in Chinuch where it's underlined. Ich efshar lilmod mikan halacha lemaisa hakan meforash atam shelo yinok mishum she'asa the davar mishchina. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu was going to speak to the Shechina. Ve'im kain. Is every single Jew going to speak to the Shechina? A father needs to pass on to his children. Where it's double underlined. Every single child, we have the potential to speak to the Shechina. They say over a maisa with the Mariel Diskin, Rabbi Shua Leib Diskin, he was one of the Gedolim of Yerushalayim. So there was a Rav, a Machaneh, came to him and was opening up a yeshiva. And he asked him for a skama. He wanted to put it down on a kol kore, whatever it was, get his signature. That the Maral Diskin's behind my yeshiva. So he says to him, let me ask you a question. He says, do you think the Mashiach is going to come from your yeshiva? From your cheder? Rav, you're like, come on. That's a pretty tall order. I hope. Mention, you know, B'nai Torah. But the Mashiach, like, it's ridiculous. He says, so I can't give you my eskama. What type of machanech are you? You don't think you're going to produce Mashiach? You don't see it in your talmidim, in your bachrim? You don't think it's going to happen? Then you're not roy. You're not fit to be a machanech. Because you're missing the boat. The whole idea is that we have to look at every single individual, right? And focus on each individual. And one more step, to see it in them, and show them that they have the potential to be great, that they could be medaber mashkinah, that they can talk to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, they could be on such an incredibly high level in ruchnias. So that's something also important to give over. So again, we have preparation, chanuch and arpi darko, and teaching each child as an individual. Moving right along, we have the Sefer Emunas Itecha. This is written by Rav Moshe Wolfson in his three volumes on the Parshios, and the third volume is on the Moadim. Okay? So he writes here, he has a little bit of a Haggadah Shel Pesach in the midst of the Moadim, and he says a beautiful idea. He quotes the Baal HaTanya. I don't know if this was the minhag at the Seder, but did we give out candies for good questions? Back in the day, yeah?
Yes.
Lollipops, candies. I don't know if anyone ever gives out nuts. That's the truth. But it's quoted here. He quotes in the Baal HaTanya, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Tzim Tov Ayin Gimel, Sif Lamed Aleph, the mitzvah lechalek letinokos, klayos, belel pesach, kedei shiyiru shinoi, mishalo manishtana. We give out little candies, we give out nuts, whatever it is, to the children, so that they'll see, they'll know that there's a difference, they'll ask questions, etc. V'afal pi, shal she'ila zo in lonu ma leheshiv lehem. So sometimes we don't have answers to their questions, especially this, mikol mokom ayidei shiyiru shinoi, at least because they see that there's a difference in the night. Yis'oru lisho gam ala shinuyim. They're going to ask on the other shinuyim achirim, the other differences throughout the night. We want the kids to be asking questions. And sometimes we don't have answers. But we want them asking questions. So he says a story here from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer's son asked him a question. Once he had a question, learning whatever it was, he suggested, he asked him a question. So the Chassam Sofer was quiet. He said, I don't know the answer, I'm sorry. And sent his son, you know, right along. 3 days later, he went back to his son. He called him into his office. And he said, by the way, I just want to let you know, the answer to your question is X, Y, and Z. So he says, okay. He says, I just want to let you know that I didn't think of it right now. I knew the answer right when you asked it to me. But it's important to understand you have to be able to live with questions, even when you don't have answers. We need to ingrain in our children. Sometimes we question the Torah, we question HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have questions in Emunah. We have to realize that it's okay to not have answers. Right? And just the question shouldn't paralyze us and inhibit our growth in Avodas Hashem and our quest to become bigger and bigger Jews and get to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just because we have a question doesn't mean everything stops. And that's what we're trying to ingrain in our children and our grandchildren, Leil Seder, to ask questions and ask questions and ask questions and keep on asking, even when you don't have answers. Rav Soloveitchik writes this in his Agada also, the importance of asking questions, and Rav Jonathan Sachs, in his Agada, he has an essay called The Art of Asking Questions, and how throughout, you know, Jewish generations, Talmud Torah is predicated on questions and answers, and more questions and more questions. Right? We need to be asking questions. My friend, I went to yeshiva with in Shalvim, he told me his grandfather went through Auschwitz, he survived, and he always told his children and grandchildren, so I heard this from my friend, like a second hand from firsthand from a Holocaust survivor. He said he got through Auschwitz with this one phrase. He said, with Emunah, there are no questions, and without Emunah, there are no answers. Right? So when one has Emunah, and we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you can ask questions, but they're not, you know, debilitating questions. We can continue.
For the sake of heaven. For the sake of heaven.
Yeah. And it's that the notion that we have to keep on asking, and just because we don't necessarily get answers, that's okay. And to keep on asking, and that's something that we want to pass over to our children on Leil Seder. Okay, then, moving right along, we have the Haggadah, Tam B'das. This is written by Rav Moshe Sternbach. Rav Moshe Sternbach it's a cute vort. I really, really like it. Especially for kids b'zman hazeh, I think it's important. We know with the Rasha, so he asks, he's a little bit chutzpidik maybe, ma v'odazos lachem, what are you guys doing? So what do we do? We knock out his tooth, right? Pretty wild line by the Baal Haggadah, right? Page 90 back in the Haggadah over here. The Rasha, Mahu Omer, Mahavod Azos Lachem, Lachem Velo Lo, Ulafi Shehoti Asatsim in a Klal, since he took himself out of the Tzibor, what do we do? He's Kafar Be'ikr, so Ve'afata Hake Es Shinov. You hit him in the tooth, you knock out, you punch him in the face, right? So what is that? First of all, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, the Baal Haggadah is telling you, kids chutzpah, give him a patch. And why dafka, you know, it could have been on the cheek. Why dafka his tooth? What's the significance of knocking out his tooth? So Rav Moshe Sternbach says that teeth help us chew and break something down, and they enable us to digest something. What does the Rasha want to do? He's not interested in long answers. What are you guys doing? He's Googling it. Right? He just wants the Twitter answer. He just wants a quick answer and that's it. He has no interest in investing time, right, and trying to understand it and ask questions and figure things out. He just wants you to tell him the answer and that's it. So what do we say? Hake Ashina, knock out his tooth. Why? Because if you're not going to, teeth again, there's to break something down, chew it, you know, make it into smaller pieces. If you're not going to digest these things, so then you don't need teeth. Right? That's the vort. And I think when it comes to chino, sometimes we need to tell our children that it's not going to happen like that. Right? People do daf yomi. My father's finished daf yomi. I think he's on his fourth cycle now. And he gives shir. Not every day, you know, once a week, once every other week, whatever it is. But you don't finish shas in a day. You don't finish shas in a year. Not in three, not in five. Right? It takes time. Line by line by line by line, you'll finish it. There's a story. There's I think it was a Russian doctor. I forget his name. I would say his name is Alexander, but that I feel like that's kind of like stereotypical. I'm not sure. But I have it on my computer. It's a true story. I first heard it from Rav Nussbacher and Shalvin, but I looked it up later online. I found it online. There was a doctor who mamish, he went to work, but he couldn't openly practice Yiddishkeit, so every single day he couldn't carry around the sefer with him. So he went to his Gemara, and he would literally rip out a page of Gemara every single day and stuck it into his jacket. And he went into like his office quietly and learned that daf. And he literally finished Shas page by page. Day by day, and when he made Aliyah, he didn't have like his books anymore. He just had stacks of shas, just pages. And that's, but day by day by day by day, line by line, word by word, that's how we finish. And I think children, especially b'zman hazeh, when, you know, we're in the era of information where everything's so accessible, right? And I don't think kids like look at encyclopedias b'zman hazeh. I remember my parents' house, we have a large encyclopedia, you know, like that's what you used to do. And no one does that anymore. Who looks at a dictionary? You know, you don't look up a word, you know, Siri, what is whatever means? Oh. So I think there's an importance to sitting and really spending time, because that's really how eventually, again, we can internalize the Torah and make it part of our lives if we really spend time. Fine, so again, what do we say? We said in terms of the child, There's preparation. There's chanoch l'nar pidarko. There's looking at each child echod individually and showing him that he can be great. There's questions. There's patience. And you'll notice I'm chazering, right? We have to make sure that kids are remembering what they learn and that they can walk away with something. I try at the end of almost every shir to summarize so that, you know, we can walk away with something. But this is also the Torah Tmima in his Haggadah Baruch Sha'amar. I don't have it here on the page, but he says that what do we do after we list the Makos? So we have Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. What does he do? He gives us a simen. What's the simen? Page 96. Tzach Adash Ba'achav. So the Torah Tmima says that this is actually Rabbi Yehuda Lishitaso. Because all over Shas, you'll finish a long sugya, whatever it is, or at the beginning of a long sugya, he'll say, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and he'll give you a simen. He'll give you, you know, three letters, and they could, you know, Shin, Lamed, Vav. I don't know, they have nothing to do with each other. But he's just giving you like, okay, these three letters are a simen for three words, that this is the sugya. Yal Kagam, whatever it is, you know? But to be able to walk away with something. And the Maharal talks about this in Pirkei Avos also, that when we learn big things, when we learn big ideas, it's important to boil them down to make them small. So I've been chazering. I think that's a way to be Mekayim, I guess this Baruch Sha'amar and the Maharal, but it's important in learning as well. Fine, let's shift gears a little bit towards the parents and the teachers. So this first page here, the all-English page, starts with Rasha on the top. I feel that's like an awful way to introduce a page of the Maharal Mekomos. Look at the page that begins with Rasha. This is a vort from the Baranovich Haggadah. Okay, I heard this from one of our Rebbeim, Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg, a few years ago, and it's one of my favorite varlach on the whole Haggadah. Okay, Rabbi Sirol Yaakov Lubchansky was the mashkiach in Baranovich. He's a big tzaddik, a lot of stories about him, we won't get into it now. But he has a great vort. He says, we have this tzaddik, not this tzaddik, we have the chacham. Great question, by the way, for the Seder. Why is there no tzaddik at the table? You'd think Russia. The opposite of a Rosh is not a Chacham. You think he's a Tzaddik, okay? Someone comes back with an answer.
Your kid's a Tzaddik at such a young age. He's not going to be a Chacham for very long.
Oh, good. okay, so what the Chacham says, Chacham, page 90, Mahu Omer Maha Idos Vachug Vamishpat Mesher Tiva Hashem Elokeinu Eschem. So what do you tell him? Va'afata Emor Lo Ki Hilchos HaPesach. And in Maftir and Acher Pesach Avikom. And you tell him Hilchos Pesach. So presumably, Rav Lubchansky says that you're teaching him everything. Emor lo hilchos Pesach means you're learning all of hilchos Pesach. There's an idea that, you know, either at the table or after the Seder to learn the Rambam's hilchos Karban Pesach, to go through it, understand the dinim. So he says here something awesome. He says that there's a natural tendency for parents or teachers to withhold certain information. But we want to remain the Rebbe, we want to remain the parent, we want to remain the alpha dog, so to speak, the more knowledgeable one. Right? So parents naturally withhold a little bit. Okay, someone once told me in preparing shiurim, you know, if you're giving a halacha shiur to Baal Batim, so maybe leave off like the Igris Moshe, or the, you know, or whoever, the Noda Bihuda at the end of the shiur. Don't put it on the Maror Mekomo sheet. So if someone asks you a question in shiur, you can tell them the Igris Moshe. You know, so they're not running it. So you always save a little bit to make yourself look a little bit better than, you know. Okay, fine. I'm not sure if I'm so into that. But he says when it comes to teaching, often there is this tendency to withhold a little bit because we want to remain the alpha dog. Says Rav Lubchansky, no. Pshat is that you have to give over everything to your children. And where do we see this in Haggadah? Such a good vort, maybe a little chassidish, but it's awesome. In the Maisim B'nei Brak, what happens? So they're going over Hilchos Pesach. And when do they stop?
Kriyashma.
How is that introduced? Who comes to them and tells them that?
Tamir.
Beautiful. What's the Lashon? Ad Shebo'u Talmidehem. What does that mean? Maybe I'll be Drush? Ad Shebo'u Talmidehem. They only stopped learning the Hilchos Karban Pesach, Halachos of Yom Tov, when? Shebo'u Talmidehem. Only when their Talmidim got to them. Only once did they give over everything to their Talmidim, to their children, whoever it may be. Now we can stop. I've done my job as a teacher, I've done my job as a parent, as a mechanech, whatever it may be, to give over everything we possibly can. So what first idea when it comes to teaching is don't hold anything back. Another idea is let the student be the teacher, or let the child be the parent for a second, so to speak. When it comes to the She'enu Yudei Elishol, of all four children, all four sons at the table, what does it say? At Psach Lo. I'm not a huge grammar guy. Usually grammar, Divrei Torah, you know, don't do it for me. But I'm growing, and this one is this is an awesome place to start. At Psach Lo, right? We should all figure, what's the problem there? It's At Psach Lo. You should open for him. Presumably the Baal HaGadah is a guy. Is the father running the Seder? I hope we can say that. Bizman is a. Okay, fine. I'm thinking that that's the assumption of the Shem Yishmuel in his vort. So it's not me saying that if I get in trouble. But at psachlo, you is lashon at is lashon nekeva. It should be atop psachlo. What's going on? So the Shem Yishmuel says over here another spectacular vort. At is lashon nekeva. Usually, you know, if you go zachar and nekeva, zachar is the one who's giving, and the nekeva is the mekabel. She receives. And generally, the Rebbe is the one who's the nosein, right? Or the parent is giving or teaching, and the students or the children are the mekablim. They're receiving. Says the Shem Yishmuel, if you want to give over, if you want to engage a child who might not be so, maybe a little bit more disenchanted, let's say, than we would like him to be, how do you engage him? How do you bring him in? At psach lo. You have to open him up. Meaning what? Make yourself the nekeva, so to speak. Let him ask the questions. Let him teach a little bit. Let him say the Dvar Torah, and you listen. Right? You be the nekeva, so to speak. Have each child feel like they're an active participant in giving over Torah and sharing Torah at the Seder, and in general at the Shabbos table, in the house, whatever it may be. Once they feel like they're able to give, so then they're going to be so much more excited about it. And I think, especially the Sheinah de Elishol, if he doesn't know what's going on, the best way to engage him and make him feel like he's an active participant and he has something to contribute. An awesome idea from the Shem Yishmael. So we have not holding back anything, let the student be the teacher. I think this is a Dover Pashut Ad Ma'od, but leading by example, right? My friend just told me in a certain shul in greater Chicago area, you know, there are a bunch, so I'm not really giving away anything. But there was a father who was at some Ma'ariv minyan. Father sitting next to his son. The father is on his iPhone in the middle of davening, and the son is on his phone in the middle of davening. So what happens? I promise you, this isn't a joke. The father turns to his kid, and tells his kid to put away his phone. My friend called me after. He said, "I was mamish, like, I wasn't staring because like I was trying to like send a message. I was staring because I was just so shocked. Like, are you kidding?" You're sitting on your phone right next to your kid. What do you think he's going to be doing? And then you tell him to put away his phone. Like, what are you thinking? So what do we see? We have Akasha. Avraham Avinu worshipped the Avodah Zarah. Before he found the Kadosh Baruch Hu, he worshipped the Avodah Zarah. So the Haggadah, in introducing the whole story, what does it say? Terech Avi Avram. Terech Avi Avram worshipped the Avodah Zarah. So this is from the Haggadah, Otzrasem Shel Tzadikim. It's a Likut. It gathers lots of different Divrei Torah and Vartlach from different Chassidisha Rebbes, Chassidisha Haggadah. They have some really, you know, spectacular ideas in there. But he says, Terech Avi Avram, again, we won't read it inside. But he says, where do you think Avram Avinu learned to worship Avodah Zarah from? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. He was only worshipping Avodah Zarah because Terech Avi Avram was. Terech was, so his father was. He says, he sowed Gadol and Chinuch, we got it to the Bincha. He says, we have to make sure that we're modeling these things for our children. Right? Rav Moshe Sternbach, I think I have it here. If you turn to the next page. Yachol me rosh chodesh tamad lomar bayom ahu. I bayom ahu yachol mi bod yom tamad lomar bavor ze lo amarti ela b'sha shiyesh matzu mar munachim lefanecha. He says what? It has to be munach in front of the children. If you say nice ideas and you don't see it modeled, they don't see it modeled at all, so then goes out the window, right? I remember once I was teaching in a school in New Jersey, and I was, you know, at my friend's house on Shabbos, whatever it was, Shabbos afternoon, and you know, some family was there. So the mother said to me, she said, "Well, you know, if you're teaching in that school, you should really teach the boys about tefillah, because you know, in shul they're always running around." So I said, I wasn't a full time teacher, so I didn't take such a, you know, okay, whatever. But I said, "Listen, I agree. Kids need to learn how to daven." But I said, I promise you, those kids are running around the halls. You should go look what their fathers are doing in davening. You can have the best rebbeim, the best speakers, the best yemei iyun, whatever it is, talking about tefillah. If it's not reinforced at all, so then what's going to be? You think the kids are going to want to be into that if they don't see it modeled? And even if it's the parents doing the talking, right? If we're talking and talking and talking, but we're not walking the walk, so then it means nothing. Right? It needs to be munach lefanav. They need to see it. And I think that's such an incredibly important idea. If you go back to the previous page, though, back to the Haggadah to Simshal Tzadikim, there's another awesome vort when it comes to chinuch. Let me just mention before, in the line of leading by example, so we have the Terach Avi Avram, we have Yachom Erosh Chodesh, it needs to be Munach Lefanecha. So this is really the Barbanel's question on the Manishtana. How many questions are on the Manishtana? 4. Okay, good. You remember that from last year. Beautiful. Okay, I'm not going to make you list them. However, the Barbanel says it's really one question. Because what? Oh, maybe, you know, let's go through it. What's the first one? Yeah, in what way? Let's test you. Page 88, don't look. Okay, you could look. First question, matzah. Second question? Morer. I guess you're not the youngest. No, I'm kidding. So we have matzah, we have morer, we have tefillah, and mesubin.
Right.
So the first two are in yonei what? They're zecher le la'avdus. It's the bitter things. Matzah, lechamoni, morer, it's bitter. But the last two are what? Chirus.
Dip twice.
In yonei chirus. Dipping and leaning.
And leaning.
So it says to Barbanel, these four questions are really one question the child's asking us. They're saying, what is going on? What are we doing? Half the things tonight are avdus, half the things we're doing tonight are chirus. He says, when it comes to chinuch, you have to be consistent. Kids pick up on that so quickly. You say one thing, you're doing something else. You say one thing and then you contradict yourself. They're so quick to pick up on it. And I think, again, I think it's included in leading by example. To walk the walk, to be consistent. We say one thing and we're going to follow through, we're going to do it also. Okay. If we turn the page, two pages, because we read that, we spoke out the Yochel Mirosh Chodesh. We have the little things make a big difference. Okay, this isn't on the pages here. Oh, just kidding. No, if we go back, sorry, that's why we went back to the Otzer Seim Shel Tzadikim Haggadah. We have a word from the Shruk of a Rebbe. Okay? It's funny, when I got this Haggadah, there's certain Vartlach I saw that I couldn't say over because I couldn't quote Peshem Amro because I couldn't understand how to pronounce the town from where the Rebbe was from. But I think this one's the Admor Mishtrakov. He has a great idea. Shelas Chacham v'Rasha. If you think about the question of the Chacham and the Rasha, so he says, it's really not such a big discrepancy between the two. The Chacham says, Ma ha'idus v'achugim ha'mishpatim. What are the laws, testimonies, decrees that we're doing tonight? Right? What's this all about? And what's the Rasha say? Ma ha'avod azos lechem. What's the avoda that we're doing tonight? Or that you're doing? What are they both asking? What's going on? So it's not such a crazy question. What's the difference between the two? So we'll explain maybe with a mashal. Let's say you're going on vacation, right? You spend weeks planning. You want to go to the old city, the old Jewish parts of Vienna. And you book your ticket. You go from Chicago to New York. You're going from JFK to the airport in Vienna. And you get on the plane. You pack your bags. And the pilot gets on the plane. And he announces, you know, we're taking off. It'll be a 7-hour, I don't know how, 7-8-hour flight. We'll get there. It's supposed to be 74 degrees and sunny when we arrive in Vienna. And you know, you're a little bit anxious, but finally you take a deep breath and you say, okay, it's going to be okay. And you land, and what happens? The pilot gets on the intercom and he says, everyone, it's a 65 degree sunny day here in France. What? And you go to the flight and you say, what happened? I thought we were going to Vienna. She said, I thought so too. I don't know what happened. So he runs up to the front, and he bangs on the cockpit door. He says, what happened? I thought we were going to Vienna. Then my whole vacation packed, planned. So the pilot says, well, you know, when we were leaving New York, so we set our coordinates, and we were 1 degree off. But I figured it wouldn't make such a big deal. But what happens when you travel hundreds, thousands of miles over time? It splits. And we ended up in France. Right? Says the Shurak of a Rebbe, when it comes to chinuch, we have to make sure we're putting our children on the right trajectory. Put them on the right path. Right? Set the coordinates straight. Okay, the Chacham and the Rasha, they're not asking such different questions, but you can tell in the words a little bit that there's something off. And we have to make sure that we're putting them on the right path. Because you never know what's going to happen years and years and years later down the road. Right? Where chinuch is not just the now. Chinuch is, we're playing for the future. Right? We're thinking in the long run. Fine. And also, I would mention, I saw from Rav Zevin, it's not in the packet. Rav Zevin writes that, you know, what's the longest meal, probably the whole entire year, that you're going to be at with your family?
Seder.
The Seder, right? Shabbos, okay. Maybe during the summer it goes for a long time. Maybe in the winter it feels like it's a long time because we go straight to Mincha. You know, but even the Purim Suda, people are getting up, going, you know, whatever. Seder is probably the longest Suda we have. So wouldn't you think, if you've made a wedding before, you know how much thought goes into the seating, right? Makes sense? So what does it seem like when you read the Haggadah? Who's next to each other? Chacham, then who do you read right after? We have the Chacham and the Rasha. Page 90. Chacham and the Rasha. So I don't understand. You're going to put the two kids who presumably don't get along right next to each other for the longest meal of your year? So Zevin explains that this is also something we need to teach our children. That the little things they do can make the biggest difference. The Chacham sitting next to the Rasha, by smiling at him, by saying hello, by being friendly, by being warm and welcoming, you never know what that interaction can do for another Jew. I remember there was a Time magazine on suicide, actually, a while back. I remember hearing this when I was in YU. One of the rabbis mentioned it. And there was a fellow who left a suicide note. And he said, I'm walking to the Golden Gate Bridge right now, and I'm going to jump. I'm going to end my life. He said, if one person says hello to me, or good morning to me, I won't jump, I'll turn around. And he jumped. Right? Sometimes just by smiling, saying hello, being cordial to people, you never know what that can do. So I think it's true on two ways. The little things make the biggest difference. We have to make sure that they're set properly, right? Because even one little discrepancy in the question down the road can be a tremendous, tremendous difference. And the little things we do bizman hazeh can also impact people greatly, like we'll never ever know. Right, we have some time, right? I'll say a story. Rabbi Mervis was here. He came in, he was calling residence at Kins, and he spoke at the YU Termes Yom Kol dinner. So Friday he spoke to the Rabbanim in the CRC. So my father-in-law, Rabbi Perro, again, he told me an amazing story from Rabbi Mervis. Rabbi Mervis was at a retreat with a bunch of boys. They were talking about what was the greatest Shabbos of your life. What was the best Shabbos you can ever remember? Okay, an interesting question for us to think about. So someone said, when he was, you know, a yeshiva bacher, 20 years old, whatever it was, he was going to like a camp or a group retreat on a coastal city somewhere in the UK. I forget exactly where. I forget the name of the city. And they were driving. There's four guys in the car. And they're driving up the coast, and they realize like they're not going to make it. Too much traffic, not moving quick enough. It's getting closer and closer to Shabbos. So there was a small town called Portsmouth. And they say, like, there's a Jewish community there, a small, old Jewish community, but maybe we should go. So they go, and they mamish get there right before Shabbos, they pull up at the shul. And they walk in, and, you know, it's much, much, much older crowd, more traditional. And they speak to someone and say, like, is there any way we can come for a meal? He said, well, you probably won't want to eat, or you probably wouldn't eat in our house. It's a little bit too far to walk. These people drove to shul, and they were going to drive back after davening, after services Friday night. So they said, but there's a kiddush. You know, there's a kiddush for Shabbos morning, and evidently the standards of kashrus in the shul itself are a little bit higher than maybe they kept at home. So they said, you can eat. You can eat what we have in the shul, you know, for Leil Shabbos Suda. And you can, you know, make yourselves at home on the benches in the shul, whatever it is. So he said, it was the worst Shabbos of his life. The worst. Again, I remember asked for the best. He said it was the worst Shabbos of my entire life. The food wasn't so good. There wasn't, you know, proper bed sheets or anything like that. We it was freezing cold that night in the shul. We had no sheets, no nothing. And by Shabbos lunch, we were already sick of the food. There was nothing for they never had a shal shittos in the shul, so they had nothing, right? We saved a little bit of leftovers from lunch. And the second Shabbos ended, we booked out of there. Fine. End of Shabbos. Worst Shabbos of his life. And he met up with the rest of the retreat. Fast forward 20 years. This fellow is now in Kibbutz Lavi. And he's amongst a bunch of people. Some, you know, from people. Some Balei Tshuva, whatever it is. And one guy was a Balei Tshuva. And someone asked him how he became from. So he said, I was in college. And I saw a group of, there was like the activists on campus, whatever it was, somewhere in the UK, some college. And he said, you know, it reminded me of when I was a young boy. I said, what do you mean? He said, when I was a young boy, I davened at the small shul in Portsmouth. It wasn't, you know, by any means a religious shul. It was pretty traditional. But one Shabbos, like out of the blue, these four boys came. And they led the most magnificent tefillah I've ever heard in my entire life. It was so lively. It was so energetic and passionate. And then we came back Shabbos morning and these guys were still there. And again, they led davening and it was amazing. And I was this little boy, but I was looking up to these. They came out of nowhere, these young, vibrant, exciting guys. And then at the end of Shabbos, he said they're having Shal Shudas. He said, I never even heard of a Shal Shudas once in my life. But I was so moved, and then these guys disappeared. And I didn't think about them for 15 years. But then I'm in college, I'm on campus, and these four or five guys are recruiting people to come join these Jewish classes on campus. And I said, these guys remind me of those four boys from when I was a young boy in Portsmouth. And it was because of those four boys in Portsmouth that I decided to join this Jewish group on campus, and through that group I became Frum. And he said, it was really because of those four boys in Portsmouth. And who was one of the guys sitting in Kibbutz Lavi listening to this guy tell the story? One of those four boys. One of those four Bachrim. And he told Rabbi Mervis, he said, what was the worst, I promise you, my worst Shabbos of my entire life, 20 years later became the best Shabbos of my life. The little things we do, you never know, right? So you have to, A, make sure they're on the right trajectory, put them on the right path. And again, the little things, the small interaction that the Chacham can have with the Rasha, you never know what that can do. The smile that good morning to someone, you can change their whole day, mamish. So again, when it comes to parents and teachers, educators, so we have not holding back anything, right? An Shibo, Tami Dehem, to give over everything we have. Let the student be the teacher, the Shem Yishmol's idea of At Psachlo. We have leading by example of Terach Avi Avraham. And we have the Rav Moshe Sternbach of it has to be Munach Lefanecha. And we have the idea of the Barbanel, the consistency. Again, we need to lead by example. We have the little things make the biggest difference, both in terms of setting our kids on the right path, and also in the interactions that we have with people. I just want to end when it comes to the Mesorah. Maybe a third idea. If you look in the last page, this is from the Rav Jonathan Sacks Haggadah, the second to last page. On the back, I can give you guys a little summary, a little outline of what we did. But the last page is from the second page in the Rav Jonathan Sacks Haggadah. Rav Sacks is talking about how the Haggadah, not the Haggadah, excuse me, the Seder, that we observe is the longest standing ritual. It's over 3,000 years old. And Jews for generations, generation after generation, everyone's been having a Pesach Seder. Where we have this arrow. Through the Haggadah, more than 100 generations of Jews have handed on their story to their children. The word Haggadah means relate, tell, expound. But it's closely related to another Hebrew root that means bind, join, connect. Right? We know by the Arba Minim. Have it in an Agadah. Igud, right? By reciting the Haggadah, Jews give their children a sense of connectedness to the Jews throughout the world and to the Jewish people through time. It joins them to a past and a future, a history and a destiny, and it makes them characters in the drama. One thing that when it comes to educating our children, being mechanech our children, we have to let them know that they're the next link in the chain. They're the ones who are continuing on our Mesorah. And to say that you guys are mamish, it's not like it's for, I don't know, rabbis and mechanechim, and you know, it's for every Jew. Doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what level you're on, every single Jew is a link in the chain to pass it on to the next generation. And I'll just end with a beautiful vort from, it's a Belzer Minog. I saw it in a Sefer, but I think a year or two ago, I also heard it from Rav Gidal Yudov Schwartz, Shev Refuah Shleima. When it comes to the Mesorah, how do we ensure we can give over the Mesorah? Okay, we say they're going to be a link in the chain, but if you tell a kid you're going to be a link in the chain, connecting Jewish people, the Dorei Doros, like, I don't know, you tell your average 10, 11, 12-year-old guy, or boy, girl, whatever it is, it doesn't get them, you know, all worked up. No, okay, great, you know, like, I don't care. How do we give over the Mesorah? How do we make sure they want the Mesorah, and they want to be the next link in the chain? So Mesorah comes from the word Mesira, to hand it, right? To hand something off, to give something over. How do you give something over? What do you use? Your hands. Mm-hmm. Hand to hand. What do the Belzer Hasidim do? On the night of Leil Seder, when they're going to give over the Mesorah, what do? They do something hand to hand. They start every Seder with a clap. They get excited. If you've ever been to a ball game, right? You start a clap in the stadium, everyone gets excited. Start a wave. Right? Everyone likes to wave at a ball game, right? A Cubs game, whatever it is, right? Start a wave at your Seder. Some kid asks a great question, start clapping it up. Right? Maybe have a foam finger, right? I don't know, a sign that says great question, you know, get excited. When our children see us getting excited and we get, you know, energized through the Torah, so then it makes it something exciting. It's something they want to hold on to, that they want to grab onto. When we show them we're excited about the Torah, we're excited about Yiddishkeit and Avodas Hashem, so that's something that they see. Rav Moshe Feinstein laments in his Sefer Ala Torah. He said there were so many Jews who were Moser Nefesh Mamish in the Holocaust and came over, right? And then when they got to New York, they were Moser Nefesh, and they would quit their jobs every Erev Shabbos, right? Or they would get fired every Erev Shabbos. But they would come to the table, and what would they say? I got fired again for keeping Shabbos. Shveretz is on the Yid. And whatever they would say. And they would krechs. So what did their children grow up hearing? Oy, Shabbos. He says, of course your children aren't going to, you know, follow your path. If we krechs every time we have to run out to Minyan, or krechs every time we have to, I don't know, Tomchei Shabbos, whatever it might be. Okay, so then our kids aren't going to think it's an exciting thing. But what? If we get excited, if we clap, right? We show our emotion, and we're excited about Avodas Hashem. I think it was the best thing in the world that the Siyum HaShas was that giant stadium, MetLife Stadium in New York a few years ago, right? If you have 60, 70, 80,000 people screaming, you know, for a football player who gets a touchdown, right? So obviously kids want to grow up being that player because they want, you know, they get, I don't know, when I was a kid, I remember I kind of envisioned, you know, getting like, you know, getting carried off the court, so to speak, after the game-winning shot, right? But imagine you have 80,000 people screaming and going nuts because someone just finished Shas. Which kid's not going to want to finish Shas? When we get excited about that clap, right, where does it come from? We were a kittel. The Ramah says there are two different reasons why we were a kittel at the Seder. One is for Tachrichim, but the other one is it hints to the Kohen Gadol who went Lifnai V'Lifnim on Yom Kippur. Okay, to understand that what we're about to do is an incredibly holy endeavor. What was he wearing before he went Lifnai V'Lifnim? He wore a me'il. What was on the bottom of his me'il?
Bells.
Bells and pomegranates. Why? So Chazal tells us that when he would walk, get closer and closer, they'd be ringing and everyone would get excited. So the bells are chassidim. What would they do? You're wearing a kittel and you're about to start Leil Seder. What do? Clap it up. Get excited. Start a slow clap at the Seder. A drum roll. Something. But to get excited, because when we show that we're excited, right, that's the best way to ensure that our children, our grandchildren, are going to want to be the next link in the chain in the Mesorah. Okay, so I hope these ideas will enhance your Seder. I hope everyone has a Chag Kasher, v'Sameach.